Kyle, go ahead.
Kyle, where's Kyle? Kyle's
is this
not
the Kyle
here.
Lamb show?
This is the Kyle Lamb show. And this is the Thanksgiving edition of the Kyle Lamb show. Welcome everybody. Kyle Lamb couldn't be here today. This week it's his week off, holiday weekend and everything. But here we are again. And
David.
What?
It's November 28th. Thanksgiving was last week.
Yeah, but this is the Thanksgiving show.
Oh, okay. So Kyle's doing his Thanksgiving show the week after Thanksgiving.
I guess he's always at Thanksgiving, isn't he? Right. And here we go again. And I mean, I am just amazed at the response to this show. I mean, we knew it was going to be big. You were quoted in the Associated Press. Did you see that in regards to this show?
I missed that.
Yeah, you were quoted about because they were talking about maybe the show's going to come out on Black Friday. You know, the huge response. They were worried about crowd control issues in some of the big cities around the country, because if this was coming out on Black Friday, it would just sort of have this multiplier effect. And I have never heard of people camping out a week in advance just to get a show that they could download off the internet. I mean, this has just been a crazy response. I mean, not just big, but almost like, I think it's been the fastest growing show in the history of human entertainment or something like that.
It has been, and I think it's all thanks to Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, it's all thanks to Kyle.
He does an amazing job. Yeah. We're so honored to be his guests these last few weeks at the show.
And again, Kyle off this week for Thanksgiving. He might be back next week. But anyway, we'll try and fill in. And I'm a little apprehensive, Chad. Normally I'd be like, yeah, let's do it. But the last time you and I did a show together, it was awful. Do you remember that Under the Radar? It was just really bad. Yeah. So,
you've done good shows, bad shows.
Right.
But well, I figured – I thought you might have been the last time we were on the Kyle Lamb show when unfortunately had a few complaints about some of his mailbag questions not getting answered.
Which is bulk. I mean, we answered all the questions. I don't know what everybody's problem is, but we're under a lot of pressure here because Thanksgiving, it can be really rough. And you know, things happen at Thanksgiving. I think Hallmark would have you believe that it's just great time of year, but you know, you drink too much and you make a pass at your mother-in-law. And then suddenly her Thanksgiving's ruined. You're in an awkward situation. You crash the car into the kitchen and you break the dishes and you break the people that may have been in the way. These things happen at Thanksgiving.
David, is this personal experience here?
Well, yeah, but who hasn't had experiences like that? And you're like, you're home, you've had a really bad day, but then you come home and you turn on the Kyle Lamb show and it turns out to be a great Thanksgiving after all, like when you're at home over that. And that's the pressure we're under here, is to make this a nice Thanksgiving for everybody, even though it's actually a week later.
You know, I do have some mailbag questions for this week.
Okay. And again, Kyle Lamb, very accessible. Like, how many shows are on the internet? Millions. Not everybody answers their fan mail like Kyle does.
Kyle does. And Kyle, if you're ready, Kyle?
Kyle's not here. He's off this week. It's his Thanksgiving show.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I forgot again. Okay, but this, again, we're recording this November 28th. Thanksgiving was last week. But Jesse from Kansas City, our first mailbag question here.
Okay, Jesse.
He says, my whole family and I are huge fans of the show, and we want to know.
That's great, Jesse. He had a question. Okay, sorry. I thought he was.
He wants to know if Kyle could come Thanksgiving with us.
Well, isn't that great? I mean, Jesse, you know what? Of course. I mean, I'm not Kyle, but we work with him. We're his managers. Of course we can do – what a nice invitation. Kansas City, right?
Kansas City.
That's where the border war was this year, or the Kansas-Missouri game right there. Jesse, of course we'll get Kyle Lamb to your house on Thanksgiving. After the show, just – what's that? Anyway,
thanks for last week. Okay, let me go on to the next
question. What's the next? Yeah, next question.
Yeah, Steve from Phoenix. Steve says, Kyle, we were wondering what you were doing for Thanksgiving, and if you had no plans, would you be able to come to our house?
Oh, Steve, I mean, again, just another – I've never heard of a show – whose audience and the host had this kind of relationship. Steve out in Phoenix, Arizona State. My God, did you see what they did in Las Vegas this weekend? Anyway, they're out in Phoenix. Did you see what they did? I mean, it's just an incredible showing. But Steve, of course, you know what? Of course, we like to make the fans happy. Of course, we can get Kyle to your house for Thanksgiving. I mean, yeah. Well, what? Well, this is the Thanksgiving show.
Okay. Angie, I got another one here. Angie from Nashville. This will be a much better question. I mean, Nashville is a great city.
Great basketball city. I mean, the Battle of the Boulevard was yesterday.
Just that's right, Nashville, hotbed, exactly.
Yeah, hotbed for college basketball.
Well, let's see what Angie says. Let me get the question out here. She says, Kyle, my family is a huge fan of the show. All right.
Big fan of the show. I mean, it just warms my heart to hear this.
She does have a question, though. She says, can you come over for Thanksgiving?
Man, I mean, Nashville, it's a great college basketball city. They got great music there, and the bars are open late, and it's just a great – Angie, yes, absolutely. I mean, we can get Kyle to your house for Thanksgiving. I mean, that's – yeah, the Thanksgiving show.
Okay. I think that – you know what? I got one more here. Just came in.
Yeah, we normally do for about four or five. So I was a little surprised when there were only three. And these are scant. Yeah, I mean, I know that there's like millions of emails coming in, but these are the best.
This is from Dale from Cincinnati. Our colleague Stalika is out there in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and a big game tonight in Cincinnati. Baylor Xavier. Two good teams in Cincinnati, both ranked in the top 20, I think, right now.
One good team in Cincinnati and one good team in Northern Kentucky.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Cincinnati. Oh, my mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot. Let's see what Dale says here. He says, Kyle, I work at a children's hospital in Cincinnati.
Oh,
the kids really enjoy the show.
Well, that's good. Wow. I mean, wow. That is, whew, man, that is good to hear. Thank you, Dale. Anyway,
There's more here. There's a question. He says, I was wondering if there was any way you could stop in for just a few minutes on Thanksgiving. It would mean so much to the kids.
You know what, Dale? I mean, it's kind of the thing, and I don't think Dale's coming from a bad place. He's probably a good man. He works at a children's hospital. But you can't just ask somebody to give up their holiday like that. And then it puts – you know, Kyle's a busy man. He can't just go to any children's hospital or any charity or anything like that. You know what I'm saying, Chad? It's just not fair to him. I wouldn't want people to think of Kyle as someone who's not where he's supposed to be. Like, of someone that you can't rely on, of someone that says, you know, he's going to be there and he isn't. I mean, that just isn't who Kyle is. He's always there. And then suddenly he gets invited to a children's hospital, and when he doesn't go, Kyle's never where he's – anyway –
I've never known Kyle not to show up somewhere where he needs to be.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that just isn't who he is. And then you get a question like that, and it just puts him in a really bad spot. Wait a minute. Read that last part again.
It says
coming to the hospital on Thanksgiving.
I was wondering if there's any way he could stop it for just a few minutes on Thanksgiving.
Wasn't it Thanksgiving a week ago? It was Thanksgiving was a week ago. Dale, of course. Dale, what the hell kind of question is that? Thanksgiving was a week ago. Of course he can't come a week after Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving. Jeez.
Support the kids, though. We really do support the kids. But,
right.
Let's move. I think we should move on to our main topic here.
Okay.
Let's wait for Kyle to tell us what it is.
Okay, Kyle. Oh, well, I just remembered Kyle's not on this week. He's on Thanksgiving break. Thanksgiving was last week, but this is his Thanksgiving show.
Yeah, you got to remember. I mean, Kyle's a busy guy, and he's always where he needs to be, so.
Yeah. Well, anyway, tonight's topic of discussion is, I think, if I read the notes here, it's the new television contract that the NCAA signed with CBS Turner. The original one was through 2024, and it made roughly $880 million a year. Is that right, Chad? It was somewhere between $800 million and $880 million a year when the tournament went from being just on CBS to being a CBS Turner partnership, and the original deal was signed through 2024. I believe it was last year where the contract was actually extended through 2032 with CBS Turner, and the dollar amount was upped from roughly $800 million a year to $1.1 billion a year, roughly over a $300 million increase per year for eight more years. And with that, it's like, well, what's going to be done with this money? Are the payouts going to get bigger? Is the NCAA going to keep more of it for themselves? What's going to happen? And what has been decided, although some of the specifics are still being worked out, is that there is going to be payouts to Division I membership or members for academic performance. And it's not just whether you make the tournament or not. It's whether any of the 351 schools meet certain academic benchmarks. There's three benchmarks here. One is a 90% graduation success rate. So that means essentially the success rates are over 6 years, and anybody that enrolled in your school as a freshman, if they graduated either from your school or from another school within 6 years, if 90% of them do that, that's one of the benchmarks. Another one is a 980.
That's athletes, by the way. We're talking.
Athletes. Excuse me, athletes. And thank you for clarifying. That's just athletes. So any athlete, scholarship or not. The second benchmark, I believe, is a 985 APR, all sports APR. So every team that you have, not just basketball, although the money's coming from basketball, it could be football, softball, men's and women's soccer, hockey, rifle, any sport you have. If you lump all that together and the APR is 985, you meet that benchmark. And the third benchmark is –
Dave, one second. On the APR, just because I know APR is a number a lot of people hear and a lot of people don't understand what it means. It's kind of a metric almost that the NCAA has invented that can go up to 1,000. It's a measurement, I guess, of not only of how you keep your players eligible academically and get them to graduate and stay with your team and complete their education there. And
earn
points. Happens and lose points when it doesn't happen, basically.
Right. The best way I can explain it is that it's a batting average, and you get a point for being eligible and you get a point for being retained. So if you're eligible and you're staying at the school, you're 2 for 2 on the day and you have a batting average of 1,000. Basically that's how it works. So it's the measurement of who's eligible and who's being retained. That's the APR in a nutshell.
Okay, and then the third, there's one more criteria.
Yeah, there is a third. If your student athlete graduation rate, so anybody that plays sports at the school, if they graduate 13%, and I have no idea where they came up with that number, but 13% higher than the graduation rate for the entire student body, then you also hit that benchmark. So various schools, and this last one is interesting because you have – your Patriot League schools, your service academies, the two of them are in the Patriot League. You have your Ivy League schools. You have highly concentrated academic schools like Davidson, Stanford, Duke, Cal. You know who I'm talking about, that have really, really high graduation rates, like 85, 90% of the students who enroll there, not just athletes, but all of them, graduate from that school. So if your graduation rate is 90%, which it is at some of those schools, it is impossible to be 13% higher than that because you can't be more than 100.
Unless you're a school like North Carolina, you graduate people that don't even go there.
Right. And then you have North Carolina that are graduating people that didn't even go to class. So, I mean, it's going to be really hard to be 13% higher when you're graduating people that aren't even there.
One of those three you have to meet. So, may not be possible. The other two might be possible at a school like a Princeton or a Penn or a Yale or something.
Yeah, and let me ask you this: on the surface, I don't see how anybody could say, "Oh my God, why is there an academic incentive? That's horrible." On the surface, below, it's like, does this just hurt the lower resource schools even more, similar to what the APR did with potentially the HBCUs? some of your Horizon League schools that have been in trouble, some of your Southland schools that have been in trouble. I mean, we've seen the schools that have gotten in APR trouble, and almost none of them, with the exception of UConn, have been in a multi-bid league. Is this, again, a benefit that mostly the upper-tier schools are going to experience once it's implemented, or is this something that sort of rewards everybody across the board? And should we be rewarding schools for on the academic side of things, which in the other argument –
One second. Before we get there, I think one caveat there, I just want to explain a little bit more there, because we described the three items here, but we didn't describe exactly what you get for meeting one of those three.
Oh, yes, yes. You get money, but
the thing here is that there is that increase of about $330 million a year over the from 2020 to 2032.
Yeah.
I believe is the time period here. What the NCAA is proposing is to take 75% of that $330 million, so about $240 million a year. And any school that meets one of those three criteria you mentioned gets a point or a unit.
Yes.
And however many units are given out, let's say there's 351 Division I schools, let's say 300 of them make it, there'll be 300 units. They'll evenly split up 300 ways that $240 million pot. The payout for that money comes out over a six-year time period, so you get a little bit each year, but it could mean a couple $100,000 per school in their back pocket every
Which is
year.
A lot when you're talking about – I mean, that's a huge supplement for a low-resource school, not so much for a power school, but for a lot of your swag schools. I mean, for them to get – remember when Southern – and not to make light of this, I know we had some fun with it, but remember when they didn't even have an APR? Well, this would certainly enable them to maybe hire someone to help with that. I mean, it's no small amount of money.
I guess, and I understand the, hey, let's reward schools that are doing the right thing academically. And David, I have two issues with it.
Yeah.
Number one issue is what I'll call the North Carolina issue. It's what a huge incentive you've just given everybody to cheat. Because now it's not only to keep our teams eligible so we can play in the postseason, it is now because we can put money in our back pockets.
Right. And why do you want to keep teams or why do you want to keep guys eligible? Why do you want to go deep into the tournaments? It's because of there's a cash incentive to doing so. I mean, sports is – there's a huge business component to it. And now this is suddenly like meeting that same means. And are you going to cut corners? Is there going to be pressure on an institutional level put on instructors and professors to, treat athletes a little differently or go easy on athletes or go to put it another way, Chad, and I think this might be where you were coming from. Say any state that has the public schools and the public colleges says, hey, you know what? Your funding is going to be based on academic performance and the kinds of grades your students get. Well, what's the first instinct that's going to happen? Well, we need to grade inflation.
And that ties into my whole other issue here, David, is who really needs this money? Who needs this $330 million? Isn't it the teams that can't reach these academic levels because they don't have the resources in the school to help the kids pass the courses? So aren't we rewarding the people that don't need the money and keeping the money away from the ones that really do?
Yes, I would say that you are. And it is a different world. Like you have, when it comes to academic support, and you're talking about your SEC, ACC, your Power Five schools, you're talking about an academic staff of 15 or more, literally. Like, each team would have its own academic advisor, not academic advisor on campus, but like an academic counselor to work with that team. There might be 50 to 60 part-time tutors on staff or more that work just with the athletes. And when you have that kind of resources, again, a lot of these teams, both in football and basketball in particular, they're not going on the road a lot in November and December. I mean, look at any Power Five school. They're playing at home a lot of the time. When you have those kinds of advantages, you're going to, it's just going to correlate into more academic success than some of your under the radar schools, your Horizon League schools, your Ivy League school, or not your Ivy, your Ohio Valley schools, your Southern Conference schools, SWAC. Where is the APR issues? Like, what schools have had those issues? It's the under the radar, low resource schools. And here it is. Yeah.
You're the one at the NCAA, you got an NCAA organization whose goal is to promote the athletic end, it's for the academic end of things as well as the athletic. And we're saying we've got this huge pot, $330 million a year that we've got of extra money beyond the,
yeah,
the $800 million we're already giving away each year. $330 million a year. Not let's devote it to helping the schools that need it.
Right.
But let's reward the ones that for academic performance. I would be a lot more happy if the result here was we got another $330 million. We're going to take, 25% of that will go towards the NCAA tournament units for the rewards for being in the tournament. The rest of it, we're going to split up evenly among all Division I schools.
Yeah, and I would favor that too.
At least that doesn't, you don't have, Duke and Michigan showing up and saying, well, why are you giving all of the money to SWAC and MEAC and Southland schools and the like? But, so just give it out evenly to everybody. So,
yeah,
they maybe with a caveat that this money must be invested into academics, not athletics.
Right, and there is no caveat in existence right now. It's just going to be more money that they're going to be spending in the same fashion, I would think, that they're spending their money now, the schools that get this break. So while on the surface, yes, there should be a reward for academic achievements. Is this the right way to go about it? And are the schools who really need this money going to get it? And the answer is probably no.
Yeah, the schools in the area are not going to get it, and the schools that do get it are going to be a lot, especially if they're in the borderline, are going to be a lot more incentivized to cheat to get there.
Right.
I'm going to let you hear Kyle's opinion on all this, though.
Yeah, I know. Kyle, unfortunately, he's off this week. It's Thanksgiving. Well, it's not Thanksgiving, but it's his Thanksgiving show. Yeah. But anyway, impossible alternatives, like what you said, I like that idea as much as any, is just spread it all out evenly among the 351 members. Or the other idea would be, what if they did it sort of like similar to how grants work, like to where you had to apply for it, say what you were going to do with it and how it was going to be implemented and used, and based on your application and need, they sort of distributed it that way. What would you think of that, Chad? So we're not just giving it to the SWAC and the MEAC and the Southland and, the Big West, and some of these schools that don't have a lot of cash to spend. But if you write in and you say, hey, we're a low-resource institution, this is what we intend to do with the money, and you're awarded it based on your application, what do you think of that idea? That way, maybe more of it could go to the Southlands, not to keep picking on the same conferences, but you know what I mean, the lower resource, under the radar conferences.
I would have no problem with that. I have no problem. Maybe we designate, we put $100 million of this $330 aside for that type of purposes each year. And if it's not all used, then that money can be split. Another $100 million gets split among everybody, and the last $100 million does go towards the pot that goes to the NCAA tournament. I mean, we don't have to dedicate the whole 330 to one specific place either, but I think I like that idea. I like the idea of maybe taking a portion of this extra $330 million. Yeah, we're talking a lot of money.
Yeah, we're talking a lot of money.
It averages out to $1 million a school a year, more or less, with 300,
right,
over 350 schools in D1.
Yeah.
Why not apportion some of it to, exactly you said, a need-based application system where we're going to dedicate this. We want to dedicate it to academics. Let's dedicate it to the places that need money for the academics.
And that would be my solution. And just another little caveat here, $1.1 billion a year, a 68-team tournament plays 67 games from the first four to the championship game. If you do the math, that's $12.7 million a game on average. So this tournament's generating an obscene amount of money.
All right. Well, what's next?
Well, that, I mean, I, normally we would go to Kyle, but since he's not here, it's Thanksgiving, or it's not. It's our Thanksgiving show, though. I guess that's it, Chad.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, so he's such a great guy, you know, and he's always there wherever he's needed, yeah. Wherever he needs to be. He never misses anything. So
yeah, and I just hope he's enjoying his week off. And yeah.
All right. Well, then I guess we'll be back again with our next Kyle Lamb show in next week, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Whatever Kyle tells us to be here, we'll be here just like he always is. All right.
Yeah.
Take care.